second hour of the program. Larry Haunton is joining the program today. In just a few moments, he'll be joining us, followed by Graham. So buckle up. In the third hour, we'll be taking some of your calls, of course. So we'll start that up in a little bit. But I wanted to make sure we dove into this story. It's kind of good news, and it's on a global level. Well, apparently, a lot of people are getting rid of those Afghan refugees. As many of you guys know, millions of Afghans poured out of the region after the Taliban reclaimed power. And, well, now they're being forced to head on back. Approximately 5.4 million Afghans have returned to Afghanistan since 2023. Now, that's mainly due to the fact that countries like, you know, Pakistan and Iran and others are just refusing to grant them asylum and are making them go back. So far, from just those two countries alone, 2.9 million have returned in just 2025 alone. And other countries like our own are looking to ship them back. Again, so far for this year alone, 150,000 of them have gone back. And it's only happening because countries are refusing to give them asylum, like I mentioned. But the UN Refugee Agency, well, they want you to have empathy, and they put up an article about it, pretty much going over all of this and how sad this is that Afghans are being sent back to their own country, saying that it's causing economic issues, humanitarian issues, infrastructure issues in Afghanistan itself. And obviously that these people are returning to severe poverty and other challenges, of course. Now, the UN is asking for other countries to pour millions and millions more dollars into this crisis. They're currently asking for 2026 to receive $216 million. That's how much they want for these Afghan refugees, of course. I would assume most are not going to be giving up that cash anytime soon. But it's good to know that they're heading on back. All right, let's shift gears to another story. DHS is expanding its efforts. This is according to the New York Times. To identify Americans who oppose ICE. Now, they're doing this by going after tech companies and requesting a bunch of different documents in regards to all of this. Companies like Google, Reddit, Discord, Meta, they're all receiving in Facebook, as many of you guys know, is owned by Meta. As many of you guys know, DHS has been very aggressive in all of this. What are they looking for? Well, I mean, they're clearly trying to uncover the bot accounts here. And that's where I think I'm going to go with this. This has been a major issue. As many of you guys know, there's a lot of fake. If you use X and use other platforms, there's a lot of fake accounts out there that are trying their best to increase the tensions between the left and the right in this country. They're pushing for full out chaos. And our own CIA does it overseas. So listen, I'm not going to be someone searching for empathy here. But what I think this is all about, although the New York Times claims that they're just upset for people who criticize the administration, I think there's more to it. I don't think it's just that. I actually think that they are trying to find who is orchestrating these bot accounts, these farm systems that are going out there and trying to create political discourse here in the United States. That's what I think this is all about. So that's my take. But the New York Times seems to think that they're just trying to go after those with anti-ICE accounts. But it's a well-orchestrated effort. I mean, anytime there's tensions kind of brewing, whether the two DHS-involved shootings or something else, they always seem to be a mountain of bot accounts going out there and trying to stir the pot. So if I had to go with my best gut instinct, I think that's what DHS is looking for. All right, folks, we have a lot to discuss coming up in the show. Also in the third hour, it is my 4-year anniversary of leaving Fox Corp. In case you didn't know what was happening behind the scenes, I'll, you know, give you a little reminder. But man, oh man, has it been quite the adventure over these last 4 years. Plus, I'll bring you an exclusive story. It's an exclusive. As many of you guys know, we broke a report regarding TSA and how an administration official within TSA did not fill out the proper paperwork to make sure that federal air marshals were receiving the raises that was promised by President Trump to all federal law enforcement agencies. Well, TSA has a bit of a feud to pick with the federal air marshals. We all know just that. I'll break down the latest because guess what? We won. A lot to discuss in just a little bit.
I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12th, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month, but we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive, but if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So we're selling three emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. And I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster, and two others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get one or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com, and I salute you for your support.
Brianna Morello has the dots they don't want connected, the truth they can't censor. The American Journal continues live on X and band.video worldwide.
Welcome back to the American Journal. We're connecting a lot of dots these days, and we're glad that you're jumping on with us today. Twitter was down for a little bit, but it's getting back into play, so welcome aboard for those of you who maybe were in the blackout because X was down. In case you didn't know, band.video is where you go to watch this show live, also InfoWars.com as well. Just click on the American Journal tab, and you could also watch us on Rumble. The American Journal with Brianna Morello is the page you could watch this at as well. And then for those of you listening on radio, welcome aboard. We are glad to have you here, of course. But let's dive into a story regarding one of the squad members, AOC. She told the crowd in Germany, this is why it's so funny, that Israel was committing genocide. And then again went on to using the comparisons to Nazis in regards to Israel's war in Gaza. Now, folks, I don't care how you personally feel about this, just from a step foot back. You're talking to Germans about genocide. It's kind of strange, right? Well, someone's right now on the ground over in Israel, and he's going to break down the very latest that he's seeing in front of him right now. Larry Taunton's back on the show. He's host of Ideas Have Consequences. You could find him on X at Larry Taunton. And he does a great job at reporting for us for abroad. He's been on this adventure. He's been traveling all across the world. As many of you guys know, we had him on a little while ago, and he was over in Davos. And now, Larry, you find yourself in Israel. So, you know, I want to hear from your perspective what you're seeing on the ground right now in Israel. But first, I want to hear your main reaction to AOC speaking to a crowd of Germans and telling them all that what's going on right now between Israel and Gaza, well, that's actually genocide. Your reaction?
Well, first, let me say, Brianna, that I am now back in continental Europe. So I was just in Israel, Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, and down at Gaza. But let's bear in mind, let's go back in time just a bit during Trump's first administration when AOC was the one who was comparing the border cages to concentration camps. And you may remember that the people at Auschwitz said, you know, AOC, we'd love to give you a tour of an actual concentration camp so that you will know not to say something quite so stupid. So here she is saying something again. She has no idea what's going on in Israel. And listen, October 7th, which is what initiated Israel's response to Gaza, it was an act of war. And in the United States, it is generally downplayed as a kind of a Bondi Beach or Charlie Hebdo type event on an attack on a Woodstock type of outdoor rock concert and, isolated, small, terrible. But really, Israel's response is disproportionate. That's the narrative. And that, of course, is not true. October 7th was an act of war by Hamas. And, of course, everybody knows that Hamas is Gaza.
Yeah, well, that's what I want to dive into for a second, Larry. But I kind of want to get your take on this because there's been plenty of reports regarding Israel's knowledge about October 7th. And, you know, we've been told that the Egyptians actually warned Israel that October 7th was, in fact, being planned. Now, I don't think they got the exact date, but they were warned about all of this. Given the fact that Israel really does have a quite the impressive national security, obviously the dome being one of the key elements in all of this, and by the way, also our own Congress backing up, which is rare, Egypt's claims that they did notify Israel prior to all of this. So we could probably say definitely that this is true right now, 1,000%, I'll go with that. Larry, how do you think about all of this? Because the timing of it's quite strange. A lot of people are going after Benjamin Netanyahu at the time of all of this. And then once October 7th happened, all of the criticism was quickly kind of silenced. So what do you make of the criticism that, you know, Israel didn't do enough to prepare that day? And in fact, many people who believe that Israel didn't do anything to defend their people that day, and in fact wanted this to happen, so that it gave them the justification to go into Gaza and do what we've seen happen over these last few years.
Well, there's a lot that can be said about that. First of all, Brianna, I was in Cairo last year, and you may recall it made, you know, big headlines, and I found myself offering testimony to the Congressional Oversight Committee because it was in Cairo that I went to the offices, really a compound of USAID, and found myself in a three-hour standoff in the streets of Cairo with the Egyptian secret police, who clearly had every intention of disappearing me. The only reason they didn't is because Trump had just, you know, had just taken office, and they weren't quite sure that I wasn't someone who was sent by Donald Trump, which was, of course, the claim that I made. I was making it up, just trying to walk my way through the entire thing. But what I had stumbled upon, Brianna, was that the USAID office there was almost certainly being run by the Muslim Brotherhood. And who's the Muslim Brotherhood? The Muslim Brotherhood has a very strong presence in Egypt, and Hamas is the military wing of the Muslim Brotherhood. And we know that October 7th, a lot of the weapons, indeed, a lot of the trucks, cars, golf carts, things of this nature, were smuggled into Gaza through Egypt, through tunnels coming from Egypt. So if I'm the Israelis and I'm told by Egyptian state security that, hey, you know, the Hamas is planning something, I don't take it particularly seriously. And I'll also say this, my own conversations with high-ranking Israeli government officials, both IDF, Netanyahu's government, as well as the police force, they all say to me that Israel's state security and the IDF have been seriously downgraded in recent decades by, does this sound familiar, by leftist policies, DEI type of stuff, by budget cuts. And one of them said to me flat out, he said, listen, this was like Pearl Harbor in that we were arrogant. We didn't think Hamas has long been deemed Israel's weakest enemy. We didn't think they were capable of an attack of this scale. And of course, they breached the wire in no less than 100 places, and some 7,000 Hamas terrorists came into Israel, and they just simply were not ready for it. And they will admit that.
Yeah. I think it's hard to see how they were unprepared for it. I would like to possibly get more of a public kind of pushback on that from Benjamin Netanyahu. Maybe him defend himself a little bit, because I don't think we've actually heard. I haven't heard him personally speak to any of it. So I think that's where a lot of the criticism lies. But you know, I kind of want to fast forward in all of this and talk about what's happening now, because you were, like you just said, on the ground in Gaza. What have you witnessed so far?
Well, Let me say this that I think will be very helpful to you, Brianna. First of all, Netanyahu had been prime minister for only 9 months prior to the attack. So the previous administrations were pressured. Again, does this sound familiar? They were pressured by the Biden administration to issue work visas, as many as 20,000 work visas to Gazans. So guess what happened? Hamas saw this as their wonderful opportunity to gather intel. So when all these people are crossing their border into Israel, they're hiding weapons, and they are gathering intel about the kibbutzim, the border agricultural communities of Israel, so that when they attacked, they knew exactly where to go. They knew what houses did and didn't have dogs. They knew the names, you know, of the people inside. And again, this is part and parcel of the left's open border policy.
Yeah, well, Larry, I kind of want to ask, you know, obviously October 7th was a horrific day. And, you know, you have to respond militarily. You can't just allow that to happen in your country. And you have to go out there and get these hostages back. Do you think what you've seen so far on the grounds, what you've seen personally unfold in front of you, do you think that Israel so far has acted within its own boundaries and everything has been appropriate so far on the ground?
Yeah, I mean, to say that, on October 7th, 1,200 Israelis were killed. Untold numbers of women were raped, mutilated. Old people were killed, 251 of them taken hostages into the more than 350 miles of tunnels, the labyrinth that's beneath Gaza. So, you know, claims of genocide, it's like saying, you know, was the United States guilty? I know there's, you know, some idiots who are listening who will say, well, yes, they were. But was the United States guilty of genocide in bombing Tokyo and bombing Dresden and bombing Bremen in retaliating? Listen, Hamas can end this war anytime they want to, just as the Germans and the Japanese in World War II could do the very same. But they won't. And the reason they won't is because they don't care. And what we are hearing from hostages that were released from Gaza is they will say to you, there's not an innocent person in Gaza. They will say, these people are all complicit. They were cheering as we were abused. They were cheering the hostages. They were cheering the bodies. They brought back bodies and heads back into Gaza. They were cheering all of this. And the October 7th attack could not have occurred without the complicity of the people of Gaza. That's just a reality. And so Israel realizes that they, you know, they're engaged in a war. And if Hamas wants to end it, then they can do so.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the key part in all of this. I mean, you're on the ground there. Do you think that this war is going to end anytime soon? Because it still kind of looks active. What was your kind of feel for it on the ground?
I don't. And the thing that I would liken it to, Brianna, is I think of, say, something like in World War II, like Okinawa, meaning that we're talking about an ideologically warped, you know, enemy. These are people, they want all Jews dead. They want the state of Israel completely annihilated. They want to mutilate. They want to kill. There's no reasoning with these kinds of people. And in Okinawa, you know, the United States found itself, you know, thinking, well, we can drop leaflets and we can reason with these people. And of course, the reality was that they couldn't. And the fact is that Hamas is dug in literally into Hamas with these tunnels I mentioned, more than 350 miles of them. And they deliberately put them beneath schools, beneath hospitals, beneath places of you know, public gathering. And that's because they're just as the United States found itself in you know, in Afghanistan and in Japan and elsewhere, you're fighting an enemy that is using your morality against you. They're using human shields, and they were using hostages in this same kind of way. So, you know, Israel, you know, finds itself in a rock and a hard place because the Biden administration was complicit in releasing billions of dollars that Trump had frozen to prevent Hamas from being able to buy weapons, to prevent the Iran from supplying them with weapons. Trump had frozen that money. The Biden administration released it. And guess what? October 7th happened. And one of the things that I really want to drive home to your audience, Brianna, is these are the kinds of things that are going to start happening in the United States out of places like Minneapolis.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's one of my fears, honestly. And as we sit here in Texas and watch as our neighborhoods are turning into Muslim sanctuaries, it is concerning. There was a lot of reports from independent journalists about how Christians are being treated right now in Israel as well. And I wanted to get your take on this because, you know, these reports, and again, it's very hard to vet for myself, honestly, because some people are obviously partisan on the issue. And so I'm a little on edge these days, but I've heard reports that Christians are treated unfairly, that churches obviously are not really welcomed in Israel. What is it like for you personally as you're on the ground there?
Well, first, let me state that I'm an evangelical Christian, and as my name would suggest, I'm about as WASP as it gets. I mean, I am a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant on both sides of my family, as far as it goes. But fairness matters here, and it's Tucker Carlson who first raised this. And Tucker, I say this publicly: I'll happily debate you. I will happily debate you on the propaganda that you're pushing, because on the one hand, Tucker Carlson was denying, he was platforming a guy who was saying, hey, Christian persecution in Nigeria, it's not happening. Tucker, I was there. You weren't. I wrote a series for Fox News called The Forgotten Christians of Nigeria. They are being annihilated by Muslims there. It is happening. A genocide is happening. So Tucker Carlson says, not really happening there. And now here he is claiming that there's this persecution of Christians in Israel. The issue there is quite a lot more complicated. First of all, what would be happening is nothing like what we would call persecution, nothing like what is happening in Nigeria. And indeed, Christians, the way Tucker Carlson is framing it, are suffering in the United States, due to policies and these things. But I did investigate this because all of this came up while I was in Israel. And what's fascinating is this: the people that Tucker Carlson is referring to, of course, he was in Jordan. He wasn't in Israel either. He didn't go to Nigeria. He didn't go to Israel. Mm-hmm. But the people he's referring to, he's talking about Arabs who have become Christians. And you see, when you're going into Israel from, say, Bethlehem, which is controlled by the Palestinian Authority, when you're going into to Israel, they have to show their ID. Their ID does not state that they are Christians. Your religious background is not stated. Your ethnicity, however, is. And so no doubt there are a number of these people who are Christians, not Muslims, but their IDs state that they are Arabs. And yet, listen, the Israelis are very wary of letting any Arabs into the country. But the bigger question that should be asked here is, why are they trying to go into Israel in the first place? Well, it's because the Palestinian Authority doesn't give them free medical care. Israel does. So they're getting free medical care coming into Israel. But listen, when I was coming in to Israel, there was nothing that stated I was an evangelical Christian, but they looked and saw that I had done work for CNN. I was never employed by CNN. I'm a freelance, writer, columnist, investigative journalist. But when they saw CNN, in my byline, they weren't real keen on letting me in. I can't blame them for that. So this is a country that has been attacked from within by Arabs who were coming into the country, and October 7th was a product of that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to hear your perspective on it. Obviously, you're on the ground and you're the one who's doing all of the reporting there. So I appreciate multiple perspectives on this. And I'm glad you kind of cleared that one up, because that was obviously something that was deeply, deeply concerning for me specifically. So thank you for that. But you're also, you're a well-traveled guy right now. You're traveling all across Europe. You're talking to these Europeans. And, we constantly hear from those on the left here in the United States that we're not respected around the world, and people don't really respect us anymore because of President Donald Trump. What do people say when you talk to them about the United States currently and President Donald Trump?
Well, it's very interesting, Brianna. First of all, let me say my own opinion. I don't care what any other country thinks of my president. I don't care. That doesn't matter to me. But secondly, the left has always been hypersensitive to what Europeans, not Africans or Asians, but what Europeans think of the United States. And that's because they're very insecure, kind of people. What you discover in Europe and in Africa and in the Middle East, interestingly enough, is the same kind of divide between what I'll call the elitists, not the elites, that's a compliment to them. They're elitists. They think they're better than you. And what we'll call common people, or populism, the populace. And what you discover is that the champagne swilling sorts, they don't like Trump. They don't like Trump. But what you find is, in the equivalent to red staters in Europe They love him. So you get into a taxi driver in Paris, a taxi in Paris, you generally find if they're French, you generally find they like Trump. But when you start hanging around, you know, policy wonks and, you know, the lobbies of expensive hotels, you'll find a very different kind of attitude there. I thought it was fascinating. I was having a meeting on a beach in Tel Aviv with this woman, and she came wearing a Make America Great hat. And I was wondering what the reaction would be. The Israelis on that beach loved it. And it's because they love Trump. And that's because they're generally, you know, more inclined towards populism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's interesting. I mean, I can understand why they'd be on board with the MAGA movement these days. Larry Taunton, you're doing an incredible job at reporting on the ground, and not just Israel, but all across Europe, as you did give us a breakdown in Davos as well. So we're very grateful for your time. Folks at home right now, make sure you give him a follow on X, at Larry Taunton, where you could find him. And of course, he is the host of Ideas Have Consequences as well. So make sure you subscribe on YouTube. Larry, it's always a pleasure to catch up with you, my friend. Be safe.
Always good to see you, Brianna. You do a great job. Take care.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate your time as always. Folks, we've got our eyes on a lot. Viva Fry is going to be joining us in a little bit to react to the latest regarding Jeffrey Epstein. And there's a lot to still dive into there because so much continues to come out from the documents we've received so far, which I think is great. And I also want to hear from Viva Fry about Thomas Massie. He's made a lot of comments lately. And I appreciate what Massie has done. I know it's been very controversial. A lot of MAGA folks aren't very happy with him. But we're going to talk about this because you don't really have too many people who I think are out there trying to force the administration to release everything. And it's unfortunate. Again, I mean, he ran on this campaign promise. All we're trying to do is search for accountability for those girls who were brutally, brutally attacked. Folks, we're also in the third hour of the show going to be taking your calls, 877-789-2539. That's the number to call, 877-789-2539. If you'd like to join the show, maybe sound off on a topic we've discussed thus far, that is the number to call into. We'll probably be doing that maybe in like an hour we'll start taking calls. But if you want to jump on hold and make sure you get your call in, now's usually a good time, but I can't make any commitments. 877-789-2539 is the number to call. So make sure you do just that. If you haven't done so already, also, folks, make sure you give me a follow on X. That's at Brianna Morello. Make sure you follow InfoWars as well, of course. I'm constantly dropping exclusive stories that you're not going to see anywhere else. And so that's the reason why it's so important for you to make sure you're following me. Because throughout the day, as stories develop, that's where I go to drop everything. Also, I know you can see my tongue's blue. Sorry, that's the methylene blue that I'm I'm drinking these days. But in the meantime, head on over to thealexjonesstore.com. It's 52% off site-wide, including methylene blue as well. I highly recommend you grab some of that. And you also grab the energy shots. Two, why? Well, because that's how I start my day every day. No caffeine. I try to stay away from the caffeine. Every now and then I'll slip into a Red Bull, but I don't want any of those jitters. And that's the reason why I do the energy shot every single day. It's a clean energy boost that lasts throughout the day. I'm telling you, this stuff is absolutely amazing. Mind Fuel energy shots. You've got to snag it over at the shop right now. And also keep in mind, when you subscribe, you are getting an incredible discount that you're not going to get anywhere else. And again, these products are top tier. So you got to head on over right now to thealexjonesstore.com. 52% off site-wide. The prices are absolutely incredible. Again, we haven't had these prices this low since Christmas. So make sure you stock up right now. Head on over to thealexjonesstore.com. We also just launched the Optimal Human Electrolyte drink mix as well. That's another one you're going to want to snag over at the shop.
All right, I'm going to be very clear about this. I've done an hour and a half of live broadcasts that have not plugged one time. You're not going to get economic, cultural, military, spiritual analysis like this anywhere else. That's not a power trip. I've been blessed by God with the best crew, the best guests, the best intel. But it's up to you to boost this information. All I ask is that you share the live feeds, you share the articles. We get shut down early next month, which is, I haven't made the announcement yet, but this is it. God keeps coming through with miracles, but it just looks like it. You'll see major movement soon. I'll just stop there. It's okay. But I'm asking all of you that have been on the fence, you share articles, videos, wonderful, keep doing it. I thank you, humbly. I'm not mad you never supported us financially, but the products are great. I'm asking everyone to do one thing. Go to thealexjonesstore.com today and one click, become a VIP for $30 a month. Now, you instantly get $40 to spend in the store, special deals, special offers, everything gets a discount when you do that. It's just like Amazon Prime. But let's just say you don't want ultramethylene blue or Shilajit or Irish sea moss or bovine colostrum that's so incredible. Not a sexy name, but sexy results. Maybe you don't want to get any of the great Patriot t-shirts. Just be a VIP every month. A donation of $30 to our sponsor, Bigly, that owns the Alex Jones Backup Network and the site. There's all sorts of behind the scenes attacking them. They're big boys too. You know, Nate was pardoned by the president for trying to save a woman on J6. He did save her. But I mean, these are patriots. Just go to the site, upper right hand corner, VIP club. Just commit. You can cancel any time, so it's not much of a commitment. But each month you charge $30 on the first day of the month. Just be a VIP. Pledge to us $30 a month. You've got NPR and PBS getting billions of dollars a year from the feds and then begging constantly for your money to shovel communism and pedophilic garbage on you. We just sell you the very best supplements you've ever seen, the widest selection of Patriot apparel, badass knives, and we're swinging for the fences. I'm totally committed. I've given up 95% of my assets, which weren't ever that big. I could care less. Actually, I'm actually happier not having a few things to deal with. But the point is that we're now up against the wall. So I need you to simply become a VIP. And then you got a bad month, whatever the issue is, cancel. And then you get more money in a few months. You know, say you're like blue collar, whatever, hardworking person, totally respectable, the bedrock of this country, $30 a month, you get a little bit of problem, cancel. It's free. And then a few months later, things are going well again, become a VIP again. But for all you middle class people and all you wealthy people that aren't investing in the fight against the tyrants, you are crazy. All of you that have means should be a VIP at thealexjonesstore.com. It's just a $30 donation. If you don't want to spend the $40 you get to buy great products and just want to let it, you can be a member and just pile up $40 each month. And at the end of the year, what's 12 months? You know, you spend X and then gotten way more in and then, you know, do all your Christmas shopping. I don't care how you do it. I'm just saying, become a VIP. One click. Hit one button. I'm an attack dog, folks. I'm born for this. I'm bred for this. I love this. I'm fearless, other than failure. I have no fear. All I'm saying is please become a VIP right now at thealexjonesstore.com. That's the simple commitment. VIP. 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 And that's the term they use for it. I would call it Paul Revere Fund. I would call it tip of the spear. There's nowhere you can support where you're getting bigger results against the enemy. Bang for the buck. It's just true. I'm not bragging. I'm very humble. I am your weapon. I am committed to you like a dog is to its owner. I mean, it's true. I am your servant. I am here to defend you and defend your family and defend your freedom because I'm defending mine as well, and we're all in this together. You understand? I am so committed to you at the very base of my soul. And I just simply want to see you awaken in the InfoWar. And there's nowhere better with one simple move than being a VIP at thealexjonesstore.com.
Tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back to the American Journal. We're excited you're all jumping on board with us today as we dig into the very latest coming out about the Epstein files. And it's been a very interesting weekend, obviously. We discussed it earlier in the program, but Pam Bondi's office decided to, of course, on a holiday, Valentine's Day, to drop over to Congress a list of names regarding the Epstein files. Now, of course, because you want to create chaos and confusion, you insert names that have absolutely nothing to do with Jeffrey Epstein, people who haven't even met Jeffrey Epstein, because, well, the people are asking for a list. And that's exactly what was done. And so a lot of people over the weekend were scratching their heads, wondering what the heck is all of this about. People who never even met Epstein were included in that list. Surprise, surprise. Just kidding. There was no surprise there. But when it comes to all of this, they're promising us that they've released all of the documents, the nearly 2 million documents. They're claiming that they've dumped out there for the world to indulge in. But Congressman Thomas Massie's calling out the DOJ saying, no, you're not being honest with the American people in clip 13. Take a listen.
Light sentence. And finally, I know the DOJ wants to say they're done with this document production. The problem is they've taken down documents before we were able to go over to the DOJ and look at the unredacted versions. They took down some of the most significant documents, two of them involving Virginia Giuffre's case and other things, the picture of Epstein at in a room where it's got CIA written on the boxes. That's been taken down. We want to be able to look at all these files. They can't keep those documents down after they've already produced them.
Yeah, well, that's one of the many, many issues Americans have with the DOJ and how they've handled the Epstein files thus far. Joining me to discuss is a former litigator and podcast host, Viva Fry, on board with us this morning. And it is an honor, of course, to have him back on the show. All right, Viva, I want your take on all of this because I see you and I kind of think alike. We're very critical, but we're fair, I'd say, when it comes to what the DOJ has done so far in all of this. Obviously, Thomas Massie has been a very outspoken member of Congress and has been pushing them to do what was laid out as the campaign commitment. So do you think Massey's on to something when he's saying, hold on a second, you're not being honest here. 3.2 million documents isn't all of the documents being dumped, and you're also pulling things off the internet. Do you think he has a case here?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you'll never know what exists that they have removed. I mean, so you can always say they haven't released everything because I think there's something out there that has not yet been released. Mm-hmm. Look, the bottom line is, at the very least, now we know that those who pushed for the release of these documents from the beginning have been vindicated in a sense. You know, it was never about vindication. It was about intellectual consistency in terms of not giving up on the demand to release these documents, the so-called list. And it was maybe not a campaign promise, but it certainly was a campaign issue that seemed to have flipped once Trump got into office. We can ask questions as to how and why. And what I love is, you know, Bongino on his show last week was actually talking about it and said, look, Trump signed the bill, the Disclosure Act, into law. So it doesn't matter how we got there. He did the right thing in the end. But it kind of does matter how we got there, because what we got was a lot of pushback from people within the Trump administration who, I would argue, were trying to sabotage Trump by screwing this entire thing up or convincing Trump that he can't release it because it would incriminate himself, when it actually wouldn't. But it might incriminate members of the deep state or members of his entourage. We got here, not in little part, maybe even, you know, because of Massie and Ro Khanna's efforts, and Trump heard his base and changed tack from having changed tack from being told to, you know, release it, don't release it, it's going to incriminate you, your name's in there thousands of times. So it matters how we got here. We got a lot of stuff, better late than never. Whether or not it violated the limit, the timeline in the law, you know, that'll be a separate issue. And whether or not we got all of it, we'll never know. I think we will never have gotten all of it. Because whatever was really, really damning in there, and it's certainly, you know, not damning for Trump, but damning for others, has long since disappeared from that file. So we'll never even know if we got the entire thing, but we got enough now to know and get an idea as to what was going on with Epstein, with his tentacles across the world, with CEOs of the largest ports of the world, with everybody. We've gotten a better view into it. It'll never be complete. It'll never be full. But my goodness, it's better now than it was 8 months ago when we were being told to shut up. There's nothing in the Epstein files.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the key point here. I mean, we've still got so much more to sift through. So I'm sure we're going to figure it all out soon. But, you know, you mentioned the president in all of this. And, you know, I think the president hasn't been very fair with Thomas Massie, making a lot of personal attacks. But Massie also waited on that yesterday in clip 14. Take a listen.
Responsibility.
And just very quickly, if you will, you've supported most of what Donald Trump has done during his presidency. But because of your actions with these files, he is supporting your primary opponent and has waged very personal attacks on you. I know we just have a few seconds here, but just your reaction to that.
Look, this is about the Epstein class. The people who are funding the attacks against me, they may or may not be implicated in these files, but they were certainly rubbing shoulders with the people who are in these files. They're billionaires who are friends with these people, and that's what I'm up against in Washington, D.C. Donald Trump told us that even though, you know, he had dinner with these kinds of people in New York City and West Palm Beach, that he would be transparent. But he's not. He's still in with the Epstein class. This is the Epstein administration, and they're attacking me for trying to get these files released.
And again, I'm going to say President Trump has not been accused of anything criminal here. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Congressman. We appreciate it.
Okay, so we're listening to, obviously, Thomas Massie make these accusations. And I get that his, you know, the president has made a personal dig at his second wife now. Obviously, he's been remarried. And I don't think that's appropriate to go to that level. But, you know, Congressman Thomas Massie going out there and saying that this is the Epstein administration, do you think that it's a little over the top?
It's hyperbolic. I do think Trump has been, say, harsh. Mm-hmm. Unfair is a tough word in politics. He's been harsh on on Massey. I think he's been unduly harsh on Marjorie Taylor Greene as well. But this is what happens when you get into political spats. And some would say it's the nature of the game, you know, stay off Twitter if you don't want to hear nasty words. And outside of the courtroom, lawyers, you know, behave much differently vis-a-vis each other than they do in the courtroom. There are certain statements that are not, you know, off limits, beyond limits, whatever. It's gotten very vitriolic between Massey and Trump. What you can reasonably surmise is that Trump might have been told to try to change tact on the release of the Epstein files because it does implicate people in his inner orbit. If no other more concrete example than Howard Lutnick. And again, yeah, whether or not you think it's the end of the world disqualifying he deserves to be kicked out of the administration, that's a separate issue. What's clear is that his name was in there in a material sense and above and beyond what he otherwise disclosed. And when you have Trump saying it's a hoax and everybody should move on and you have Howard Lutnick laughing in the background, he knows damn well what comes out of that could embarrass people in the close orbit of Trump. I don't think it's an Epstein administration, but these are buzzwords and catchwords that you use on the internet for traction. But it's quite clear members of Trump's inner circle, or at least administration, Howard Lutnick is the most immediate example, were involved with Epstein in ways that they had hitherto hid and been dishonest about. So you could understand that rationale. You can understand Pam Bondi saying it's going to implicate a lot of people, not necessarily in your circle, but in the so-called deep state, so-called, you know, the globalist entities, and we need to find a way to protect them. So I'm going to convince Trump that releasing the files would embarrass him, when in reality it did nothing but exonerate Trump himself, albeit embarrass people in his close orbit.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I mean, Viva, you're spot on with that. And I can't get over this one email that we're seeing. We'll pull this up. It's a document that reveals that there were children actually being abused. And I keep hearing Pam Bondi come out there and say, and Todd Blanche come out there and say, the deputy AG as well, that, you know, this is an ongoing investigation. If we have any proof of a crime, you know, we'll look into it. I mean, the details, and I spared our audience of me being able to read it because I'll start crying, but the details are just disgusting. It's over a photo that apparently they have in their possession, which shows a young girl who's clearly not of age being brutally raped. I mean, there's blood everywhere, and it's just, it's an awful, awful detailed report. We see things like this, and it's really hard for me not to lose my mind on the issue, because that's rage bait to me. I mean, I'm reading this and I'm going, well, how between over 3 million documents that they apparently have, that they've now released, how is there not enough here to show that there was crimes being committed? And how do we not know the identities of these men? I mean, I get it, it's a still image. Their faces are probably cut off, but there's got to be clear body markers where they could be able to tell who's who. Your thoughts on all of this, because I just don't know how to put this into words as to how enraged I am that they keep putting this information out there and then tell us that there's no one who's being indicted as of yet. No one new, I should say.
It's. I mean, I would say there's no other better term than gaslighting, and it's gaslighting of the highest. Because remember, they said when you relive the timeline, you think you're taking crazy pills. We were told Epstein, Epstein, Epstein. You had, I'm not even saying this to blame them. I'm saying it's because I think they were, you know, right. Patel and Bongino for years say, don't let up on the Epstein files. There's more here. We all know it. We have people on the inside. Then Trump gets into office, and then somehow it becomes a nothing. There's no documents. There's nothing to release after having bungled the phase one rollout. Then after Massey pushes, fights tooth and nail to get it done, Trump signs in the law and we get there. Then we get the release of documents we told weren't there. And now we're being systematically told there were no other co-conspirators. This was only for Epstein himself and his own prurient interests, and there were no other co-conspirators. Then you got Les Wexner, mm-hmm, literally identified as a co-conspirator, but then people are going to say, oh, he was only a co-conspirator in trafficking to Epstein himself for his own prurient interests. And I have these discussions with people on the internet, and it's like, again, crazy pills. You're starting from the beginning in every argument that you have. People say, name me one person, one shred of evidence of someone who was involved in trafficking that was either not investigated or not charged. And I had this discussion yesterday. I was like, all right, here's one. Jean-Luc Brunel, who was charged in France before he was found hanged in his cell in France, who was allegedly involved in trafficking with Jeffrey Epstein. So good enough for charges in France, but he never faced any charges in America. And then people say, well, he's dead now. You can't charge him. Now you at least have recognition that there was an individual involved beyond just trafficking women to Epstein who managed to face charges in France at the time, managed to die in jail again, and you have other people now who are getting charged in foreign countries. So the argument that Nobody else was involved in the actual sexual abuse or trafficking. Doesn't hold any water, and it's gaslighting to affirm otherwise. Yeah. The main issue is you get into a situation where you don't know what documents you can believe. You don't know what documents are anonymous tips by mentally ill people to the FBI that people then use to go after Trump and say, oh my goodness, someone said Trump killed women and buried them in Mar-a-Lago. So how can you rely on this? We're sort of like in a post-information era where you don't know what is real and what is not. But the bottom line is you can stay away from the most hyperbolic, delusional fantasies of mentally ill people calling in tips to the FBI when Trump was running again in 2020. And the obvious, which is Jean-Luc Brunel, just look him up, managed to face charges in France. And yet we're being told nobody else was involved in any global sex trafficking ring. But Jean-Luc Brunel is one example who managed to never get charged in America.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's one of the many, and it's really infuriating. I also want to get your take on this. This is obviously very controversial. Steve Bannon's name has been wrapped up into a lot of the text messages that have been released as well. And they're very concerning. But again, it's an accusation. There's nothing out there that shows that he was doing any type of sexual abuse. So I want to be very, very clear in all of this. But a lot of people are being very critical of Bannon right now, because it's clear that after Epstein was convicted of being a pedo, there are text messages going back and forth between the two. He's even in this text message chain referring to Jeffrey Epstein as a god. Even Epstein apparently claiming to say that, I don't think of myself as that, but, and then Steve Bannon responding, according to this document, I do. Now, again, these are all accusations. Bannon hasn't come out to speak out against any of this, but people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, General Michael Flynn, I mean, these are people who are, you know, wrapped up into the Bannon orbit of things. They're coming out and saying, we need explanation. We need to talk about this. What do you think so far of the lack of silence in regards to Bannon's messages, his very personal messages with Jeffrey Epstein? And do you think it's just possibly, I mean, he's obviously hosting a show. He's trying to run companies. Do you think this was all about finances, or do you think there's anything else here?
So I had my thoughts on this last week. You know, one way or the other, it's an elephant in the room that's not leaving until it's addressed. So yeah. Bannon's going to have to address it at one point. The temptation is to ignore it and hope it goes away. And again, I'm not making any accusations of sexual improprieties. You don't have to. Fraternizing with a known sex offender of minors after it's known, because this is 2019, that's something which, even if there is an absence of any actual culpability by Bannon himself, is something which many people are going to have a problem forgiving. And then, you know, you can make the argument, maybe there was I saw Liz Crokin put out a theory that maybe he was a white hat, or, you know, it was an operation to try to infiltrate, whatever, work with Epstein. The bottom line is, it could have been done out of financial necessity. It could have been done out of political expedience. It could have been done for any number of reasons why he was fraternizing and trying to rehabilitate, or purportedly trying to, you know, work on the rehabilitation of a convicted sex offender. Some people would say, you know, every client needs a lawyer. True, but, you know, rehabilitating the image of a convicted sex offender for public consumption is not something that people are going to put up with for very long, especially when it's Epstein himself. What I have trouble with as well is people are saying Bannon was colluding to impeach Trump. He was colluding to overthrow the Pope. And I read these very same messages, and I don't read it that way. Whether or not they're schmoozing and Bannon is trying to gain goodwill with Epstein because maybe he thinks Epstein will support financially whatever Bannon was doing, or there's some political capital there, or he's trying to get intel to bring it back to Trump. I don't know. But sex crimes aside, fraternizing with a known minor pedo sex offender after it's well known and after he's basically the pariah that he became in 2016, you got some explaining to do, and silence will not answer the question. It's just going to allow everybody else on the internet to now read one document in two different ways and come up with even more crazy potential conspiracy theories. But yeah, Bannon has some serious questions to answer, and people want to use this to, you know, write him off as a human, and they're going to successfully manage to do that. But Bannon has, from a politics perspective, very good, very useful populist ideas and ideals, and has been very influential on the political front. And this is going to serve as the basis, as the ability for everybody to write him off, demonize him, and harm the populist movement itself. But got to reiterate, fraternizing with known sex offenders, registered sex offenders, to rehabilitate their image. Maybe everybody needs one of those PR guys, but you don't have to be that PR guy, and you should expect righteous indignation and judgment for becoming that PR guy willingly.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I still want to hear what he has to say about all of this, but, you know, I can't allow that to go by and to slide by and pretend like it's acceptable. It just really isn't. And I would never find myself in that situation because I would never put myself in that situation. I mean, they all knew what kind of monster he was. And so it's very discouraging to see. But we do need to hear from Bannon directly. And I hope he does just that. I want to shift gears a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about, obviously, Alex Jones. I know you did a show and you were detailing specifically what the latest claims and the filing is in Alex's lawsuit. And as many of our audience members are well familiar with, obviously, the Sandy Hook settlement, the ruling against Alex has completely bankrupt Alex, and he's been talking about this openly. But Alex has had a lot of his constitutional rights violated throughout this entire process, and that's been his focus. Not even to argue the merits exactly of the actual whole trial, the show trial itself, but to really go out there and say, hey, listen, I had my rights violated. So in an update, he's now countersuing over all of this. And it's things like, you know, obviously this was an excessive amount of money to say that he needed to cough up and pay these families. And so that violates, number one, the Eighth Amendment. But he's also claiming his Fifth Amendment rights were violated as well as First. And on it goes. He was also upset because his Hillary Clinton deposition was turned away, was not allowed. He wanted to, you know, have her speak. So there's a lot of different elements to all of this. I just kind of wanted to get your reaction because none of this has ever been done to a person before. But we did notice that right after they got away with once they got away with what they did to Alex, we saw that there were other defamation lawsuits and quickly being filed afterwards from other conservative influencers. And so from my perspective, regardless of how you feel about Alex Jones personally, it's always been about, well, what's going to happen next? Because he's usually the first guy attacked, and then it happens to other conservative influencers. And there weren't that many people, I think there should have been significantly more, speaking out on Alex's behalf and defending him, because this was going to be a long-term issue. But what do you make of the latest filing? Because I know you've gone through it, and the lack of voices speaking up on his behalf.
I don't know that Alex, I've been told that David Icke was actually before Alex Jones, and there might have been other prior examples of lawfare that became popularized with Alex Jones. Alex Jones definitely was the or a canary in the coal mine in terms of what the courts could get away with by stripping you of your ability to defend yourself, because that's all that they did in Connecticut and Texas. They stripped him of his ability to defend himself. Then they defaulted him into a liability verdict, bypassing jury findings, bypassing judge findings, and basically allowing the plaintiff to set the terms of its own victory on the basis of purported discovery violations, like not disclosing documents, which A, is bullcrap, even in this context, but B, I was a practicing lawyer for 13 years, and Mike Cernovich put on a tweet, said, find another case analogous to someone being defaulted into liability after having complied with discovery obligations. And I was like, forget that. I've never seen someone defaulted into liability even when they get caught destroying evidence, which Alex didn't do. So this entire case was a violation of constitutional rights. Everybody knows that. And then they went on to use the template, oddly enough, against Bannon, stripping him of his ability to make positive defenses, Navarro, Giuliani, Donald Trump. They went on to use this template, mutatis mutandis. And everybody who thought, well, it'll stop with Alex Jones, and I don't like Alex Jones because he said some stupid things about Sandy Hook 10 years ago, 16 minutes over the course of a decade. Well, I'm not going to say anything to him or about him because he's a bad man, and I've been told he's a bad man. Well, now you're waking up with what that is. This filing, however, not to get blackpilled for your audience, I don't see it going anywhere. I had to get clear, make sure, you know, touch up some of my questions with Robert Barnes last night during our show. In the context of the bankruptcy proceedings and the liquidation, he's basically filed what is, you know, civil rights violations by way of a claim to say, don't discharge certain aspects of the bankruptcy because they were obtained fraudulently. The problem is this, and this is the question I ask, why hasn't the civil rights division of Trump's DOJ gotten involved? Like, this is a man, Alex Jones, who arguably, but not arguably, through his populist influence, got Trump elected in 2016. That is arguably, but not arguably, exactly what spawned this intelligence-based lawfare against Alex Jones, which we now know that they were, you know, FBI initiating the claims to take down Alex Jones because he managed to get Trump elected over Hillary. Why hasn't Trump's civil rights division got involved in this? This was a civil rights violation from the get-go. And the problem is now, Jones is filing this First, Fifth, Eighth Amendment violation claim to say why you should not grant this portion of the liquidation to the plaintiffs because, you know, this judgment was bullcrap. The problem is it was ratified at every stage of the legal proceedings by the lower courts, appellate courts. Supreme Court refused to hear it. So I don't see a bankruptcy court bypassing what has effectively been ratified by the Supreme Court through the refusal to hear the case, and bypassing or usurping what ought to be done through the Civil Rights Division of Trump's DOJ to annul the legal process. So I think this is a case that is intended to be waged in the court of public opinion, not in the bankruptcy court, because I don't think it goes anywhere in the bankruptcy court, but I'll be more than happy to be wrong on that. But this entire case has been an injustice from the get-go, and anybody who sat there quietly or even egged it on, enjoy the hell that you shall inherit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the problem in all of this. And it doesn't end at just Alex Jones. It will continue to go on, and others will be forced in the same position. And, you know, Viva, before we go to, it was a little upsetting because the weaponization group over at the DOJ was actually trying to poke and look into all of this and see what the federal government's role was in this civil lawsuit. And, you know, according to our sources, the attorney general, the deputy attorney general, Todd Blanche, was the one to shut it down and stop Ed Martin from looking into all of this. And nothing's come of it, sadly, ever since then. And the reaction, too, I mean, we haven't heard the Civil Rights Division. I mean, that's run by Harmeet Dhillon. And I really was excited when she stepped into this position, but I haven't seen any movement on that front either. So it's quite, you know, concerning, but just your overall review of that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not just no movement. It's actual suppression. And the disconcerting thing is we are now over a year into Trump's presidency. Mm-hmm. Tina Peters is still rotting away in a Colorado jail 9 years for whistleblowing on the election. Dexter Taylor rotting away in a New York State prison on Second Amendment violations. We know that this was shut down to some extent to get involved in the Alex Jones. And now you have Harmeet, tooting the horn of Pam Bondi's catastrophic hearing last week. And you do wonder what the hell is going on. Harmeet had done some good work, looked promising at the beginning. And now, it just looks like it's been taken over by interests that are not populist, not MAGA, not Trump. And Alex Jones, it's not that he's been loyal. It's that, A, he's been abused by a system, specifically because of the results that he got for Donald Trump, to throw him under the bus, Alex Jones, that is, and to ignore this patent civil rights violation. It will translate poorly in terms of support. So, it's never over until it's over, but we're getting very late, especially when it comes to the fact that, early voting has already started for the midterms. We're going to see the impact of this, but I can't think of any good excuse for which we have seen not only no movement, but almost backward movement when it comes to certain egregious civil rights violations. Tina Peters, Dexter Taylor, and Alex Jones are the top three.
Yeah, Viva, I mean, you're not alone on that one. It's been frustrating to sit back and watch. And of course, Dexter, we try to get him on the show, but unfortunately, the prison doesn't allow him to make these outbound phone calls. And that's been our biggest struggles right now. But Viva, I want to thank you for jumping on with us today. Of course, folks, give him a follow on X at the Viva Fry. That's FREI, in case you're wondering. Make sure you do just that. Viva, thank you. We'll be right back with more.
I see through a rose-colored darkly. That means I'm trying to tell you the truth, but I'm not always right just about 98% of the time. And bad guys of every stripe don't want this show on the air. But you're the good guys. You have to decide, hey, this guy's a fighter. This guy stood up for this. This guy has an incredible track record. We want to support him. And then I'm going to sell you something that really works so you love it and you get it again and again. And Bigly, our great sponsor, those at thealexjonesstore.com. No matter what happens, InfoWars, we continue on the Alex Jones Network that's been built. So Key said, Alex, you keep getting it wrong. We don't have 84% reorder on Ultramethylene Blue. We don't have 76% reorder on the supplements and average. You're reading that wrong. That's on total customers. We have a 97% reorder from anybody that orders at thealexjonesstore.com. Well, that's a testament to you guys out there supporting us and how great the products are. Nobody, I mean, a site that has a 20% reorder is seen as successful. That is you being steadfast supporters, and I want to thank you. So we're running the biggest sale of the year right now, over 50% off on ultramethylene blue, on the bovine colostrum, on the new methylene red that's proprietary to us, on the Shilajit complex, the Irish sea moss, atomic defense, and more. But it's only running until next Monday. Got 6 days to take action. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Takes money to fight a war. We're fighting a war. Plus, the products are great. So please, get yours now. Over 50% off, but it's an alert. Only a few days left. Thank you so much.